after this course, typical setup in Rhizoscopics often looks as follows. So you have nearly ideal leads with little or no scattering, contacting some disordered rhizoscopic system. Okay, so this system could be many different things. It could be a quantum wire, could be a quantum dot, could be just a disordered region of your conductor. So this is usually disordered, and leads are ideal. Okay, so main features of this setup are the following. So first of all, you can view the propagation of electrons in the lead as ballistic. Okay, so you can think about the leads as essentially waveguides for electron waves. Also we are going to be interested in the regime where ballistic, it means they do not scatter and they don't turn around. There is no disorder. Okay, so they can go, let's say, from this point to this point without ever scattering. Okay.
Collimated.
Excuse me.
They are collimated.
What do you mean by collimated?
Yeah, they stay.
Right. It's like a waveguide, right? So except in the waveguide, you have light traveling, and here you would have an electron wave traveling. So we will also assume that you can go through this whole system without losing coherence. So this assumes that usually your temperature is low and the system is not too big. Okay, so now if you try to think on the intuitive level how transport in such a setup works, you would understand that the main thing that matters is how this mesoscopic system scatters the electron waves in the waveguides. Okay, so because you know how the states are, what the states look like here, right? So they're just propagating freely propagating electron waves going either this way or this way. Okay, but the mesoscopic system itself is disordered and it can scatter them, right? So it can either let you get transmitted to this lead and carry current, or it can reflect you back, and then there is no contribution to the conductance of the system. Okay, so quantum mechanically, you know that you can characterize your mesoscopic system by its scattering properties, right? So scattering matrix. And today essentially our goal would be to establish the connection between the scattering properties of the mesoscopic system and the transport you expect in such a setup. Okay, so relation to transport. And you will see it's quite a powerful and universal approach which can be used to describe a lot of devices and systems. So let's start our discussion with the simplest case when each lead can support only one mode. Okay, so essentially how can one realize it? So imagine that we have a quantum wire which is infinitely long in this direction and finite in the transverse direction with a size a. Okay, and let's think about the band structure of such a wire. So you know that energies are given by the energy of the transverse motion. So let's say this is y z x, right? So it would be energy in the y z plane plus energy in the x direction, right? And this motion is discrete, so you would get some quantized levels, which I will label by index n. Okay, and motion in the index direction is free, so here you get just usual kx squared over 2m. Okay, so now if I plot this dispersion, what would it look like? Oh, and also important point is that the spacing of this quantized transverse eigenvalues is of the order h squared over 2m a squared, right? So this is just usual levels in a quantum well, right? So now if you plot the dispersion, right, you get a series of bands, right? So for each value of epsilon naught, you get a band. Okay, so you start with the lowest band, then you have another one which is displaced by this value of the order h squared over 2ma squared, okay, and so on. So you have infinite number of bands, and from this picture you see that that the number of propagating modes in your quantum wire really depends on where you put your chemical potential. Okay, so for example, if you put it here, right, then you see that you're forbidden from being in any of the higher bands, and you're forced to be either here or here, right? And here you can see that the group velocity is negative, so you're going this way. This is mode propagating here, and here it's positive, so this is the mode propagating this way. Okay, so this is how you can realize this simple situation of just one propagating mode. And now let's ask the following question. So let's imagine we put the chemical potential here, and let's ask what would be the conductance of such an ideal wire without any barrier you would measure. Okay, so what do you need to do? You need to essentially, you need some reservoirs which would supply electrons. Okay, so let's say we have left reservoir attached to the wire and right reservoir, okay, and we can change their chemical potential and drive current through the system, okay. So what is the conductance? Is it finite or is it infinite? Because in principle the system looks ideal. There is no scattering, right? So from this you may have incorrectly guessed that the system would have infinite conductance, but the second you'll see that this is actually not the case. So let's assume that we apply different chemical potentials, and let's find the current. Okay, so the current, we can just calculate the current through some cross section in the wire, and it will be given by the difference of the currents going from left to right, carried by the mode propagating this way, minus the current carried by the mode propagating this way. Okay. Let's calculate each one of them. So, current going from left to right is given essentially by the electron charge times the density of states times their chemical potential, and so density of states times Fermi velocity and times the chemical potential, right? So this is because actually it's better to write it like that, times their velocity. So because this product, density of states times chemical potential, just gives you the density of electrons. Now What is the density of states? So in one dimension, let's calculate it as follows. So let's assume that the dispersion is linear, and you can convince yourself that it doesn't change the answer, right? So let's assume that epsilon is simply given by K V Fermi, right? This means we are only considering the region where we are only involving the electrons living near the chemical potential. And as long as the voltages applied to the system are not too large, this is of course justified. Right, so under this assumption, you know that the density of states is simply given by this, dk over 2pH, right? This is number of states, and you can see that remarkably you get density of states which doesn't depend on the energy, okay, but which depends on the Fermi velocity. So let's substitute it here, and then what we are going to get is that current from left to right is given by E times chemical potential in the left lead divided by 2pH, okay? So, and of course here in case it's not clear, so here we put we have to put the left chemical potential because all the right movers come from the left lead, right? If you trace their history, you would see that they have to come from the left lead. In the same way, all the left movers came from the right lead. So their current is the same, except you need to change the left to right. And from the simple consideration, we can get the total current through the system. Right, you'll find that total current is given by such a formula. And you can remember that the chemical potentials are related to the voltage you're applying. Right, so they're simply proportional, and you get a relation between the current and the voltage you applied, from which you can easily get the conductance. Right, so conductance is the ratio of current to voltage, and it's E squared over 2pH. So this result is simple but quite remarkable. So first you see that that this conductance is finite, right? So it's finite despite the fact that there is no disorder in your system. Then another remarkable feature is that it only depends on the fundamental constants. Right, so it is completely insensitive to the size of your wire, to the Fermi velocity, and so on. Okay, so if you could engineer an ideal quantum wire, you could in fact use it to determine the values of the fundamental constants. And yeah.
Okay, this formula is for a given spin, right?
Yes, this is so I will assume that electrons are spinless. Yeah. Uh-huh. Thanks. If you if electrons have some internal index spin or some other quantum number, you just have to multiply this result by the degeneracy. Okay, so for the case of spin, you just multiply by 2. Okay, so we will see that in fact you can realize very very good versions of these quantum wires if you apply magnetic field and if you get quantum Hall states. So and in fact. In fact, people use it to determine values of this fundamental constants. Now, what you may wonder, looking at this derivation, is so how is it possible? So I started with something with some object which doesn't have any scattering, right? Doesn't have any voltage drop across it. So, but nevertheless, I ended up with a finite resistance, right? Finite conductance, therefore finite resistance. So this means that heat must be dissipated somewhere. Okay, so where does it happen? And the answer to this is that, of course, yes, there is no voltage drop across the wire, right? And all the voltage drop occurs between the contacts, between the reservoirs and the wire. And the heat is dissipated also in the contacts. So what happens is that what happens is the following. It's dissipated in contacts. Some more energetic electrons would come from the left contact to the right, right, and they would heat it up. Okay. So you can check, you know, by simple calculation that that the power dissipated in this process is exactly given by the squared over the conductance. And also let me mention that, of course, our implicit assumption here was that, very important one, was that equilibration in the context happens very quickly, okay, and the motion in the context is fully incoherent. If you release this assumption, then you can end up with a lot of strange effects, and this simple picture would no longer hold. So is this part clear? Any questions so far? Okay, if not, let's go further. So now let's move a little bit closer to our original setup, but still let's keep it simple. So let's consider quantum wire with a single barrier, with a single potential barrier. Right, so now our setup will be as follows. So we will again have the quantum wire, left and right lead, and we will have a single potential barrier here. So how should we think about the electron states in this situation? We know that that the eigenfunctions in the wire in this case can be found in the form of scattering states. So you can have two families of solutions. So one is where you're sending a wave from the left, and it gets transmitted with some probability t times the exponential, or it can be reflected with some amplitude r. Okay, and in the same way you have another family of solutions where you're sending a wave from the left, and you also end up with a reflected wave, right? So in general with a different reflection amplitude, or you end up with a transmitted wave also with some different transmission. Yeah. All right. So let's think about the distribution function in the context. Okay. So let's plot the number of electrons at a given energy as a function of energy. Okay. So in the left contact, you're filling all the states up to the chemical potential, right? In the right contact, you're filling all the states up to some smaller value mu right. Now, if you connect them by this quantum wire, right, you know that that this many electrons per unit time would come from the left reservoir to the right one. So this is going to change the distribution function, right? So after some time, distribution function in the right lead would have this step, and also it would have some more energetic electrons. Okay, and effectively this increases the energy of your system per electron, right? And you can calculate that the excess energy you're providing, right, is can be exactly related to the standard relation. Is it more clear? Mm-hmm. Your assumption was that there's equilibration in contacts. Mm-hmm. So then you probably remember that any general solution which contains, you know, waves coming from both sides and reflected waves can be written as follows. So you have some arbitrary incoming. You have incoming waves with some arbitrary amplitudes. Okay, so let me call the modes in the left part A, in the right part B, and then you have some outgoing amplitudes, right? Outgoing waves with some amplitudes, and you can write the general relation between the outgoing and incoming amplitudes, which is simply related to this reflection and transmission amplitude I had here. Mm-hmm. And this is nothing else but the S matrix which characterizes the barrier. What are the conditions on this S matrix? So first most important condition is that it must be unitary such that which tells you that the current is conserved, whatever you send on it has to come out. Also there is another important relation which comes from the time reversal invariance. So you can use the time reversal invariance to build the following argument. So if you have some solution which looks like that, and the outgoing ones are related to the incoming ones, you could in principle change the direction of time, and you know that then you have to take the complex conjugate of your amplitudes. So from this you would get that the of course you need to change the direction of the propagation of the waves, right? So incoming become outgoing and vice versa. So then you get that now such a vector would be also a solution, right? But if it's a solution, then you know that this one should be related to this one by the S matrix. Okay, so then you can write that should be just the S matrix, A out, B out. Okay, and now by just comparing these two relations and using the unitarity of the S matrix, you can convince yourself that this implies that S matrix should be equal to its transposed. So this means in particular that T prime must be equal to T. Okay, so this is often a useful fact. After we reviewed this simple general properties, let's go back to our original question and let's calculate. Yeah.
So then R must be equal to R prime.
Phase could be different. Yeah. Generally. Mm-hmm. So now let's go back to our original question and let's calculate the conductance in such a situation. And you'll see in a second it's related to the S matrix in a simple way. So In this case, the current from left to right, let's say we would calculate across some cross section here, right? So it would be simply squared E over H times left chemical potential times probability that you got transmitted, right? Because some stuff gets reflected and only this fraction of the electrons made it through the barrier. Then of course, another contribution to current comes from the electrons which came from the right lead, got reflected and went back, right? So contribution of such guys is given by mu right times the reflection probability. Okay, and the and let me call the probabilities by T and by R, capital letters, right? And now the current from right to left is simply in this cross section, it's only the electrons coming from the right lead. So it's E over H times mu right. Okay. Now if you subtract them from each other, you find that the conductance is simply given by E squared over H times the probability to get transmitted. Okay. So it's a very, very simple modification of our previous calculation, right, which tells you that conductance, that the two terminal conductance is directly related to the transmission probability through the coefficient. And this relation is known as a Landauer formula. Right, it will be important in a second that in this setup we have only two terminals. So this is two terminal conductance. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, guys, any questions about this part? Is it all clear? Yeah. Uh-huh. So current from right to left. So let's think which electrons cross this cross section this way. Right? So it's so let's assume that some electron crossed it, and let's trace its history, right? So it means that it came from the right lead, right? And it had no obstacles on the way, right? So this means that all the electrons which came out of the right lead made it through this cross section, and only them, right? So this means that number of such electrons is proportional to the chemical potential, so that's how we got it. So now let's consider a more general situation. So let's consider a generic multi-terminal device. Okay. So what is the motivation for it? So first of all, most devices have more than two leads. Second motivation is that there are different kinds of leads. You can have leads which you use to pass current, and you can have leads which you use to measure voltage. Right, so voltage probe. So you can use extra leads to essentially study how the voltage is distributed in your system and where it drops, right? So that's also, that gives additional information. We will see in a second that the classical circuit theory breaks down, it must be modified, and we'll generalize the Landauer formula to understand how it must be modified. So let's consider some device with n leads, and we will pick n to be 4 here, right? So let's assume that there are different chemical potentials in these leads. And let's find the currents and relate them to the scattering properties of this device here, right? So let's denote the scattering matrix by S, okay? And generally, this scattering matrix can be written in the following form, right? So it has components, let's say S11, which correspond to you being reflected back to where you came from, S12, that if you came from one, you ended up in two, and so on, right? Right, so you have S21, S22, and so on, right? So up to S44. Now, important thing here is that each block here could be also a matrix, right? So in case you have several propagating modes in each lead. Okay, so in general, this is if N1 is the number of modes here, right? Then this is N by N matrix, right? So this is a completely general form. And now, so it will be convenient for us to define the following quantities, which play the role of the transmission coefficient from lead beta to lead alpha. So essentially, let's sum over all mode indices. Right, you need to add all the transmission coefficients for each pair of modes. That if you started in one mode and one contact, then you ended up in another mode in the other contact, and you can relate it very simply to this S matrix. Right, so it is simply trace beta alpha S beta alpha. Right, so you just need to take such object with this with the corresponding block in the S matrix. And in the same way, you can define the reflection coefficients which would be, in this case, indices alpha and beta would coincide, but nothing else would change. So now we can easily relate the currents coming from the alpha lead, right? So it's simply its current which exits, right? So it's number of modes in lead alpha minus this reflection coefficient, minus the current which, so this is current out of the lead alpha, minus sum over other leads of what got transmitted and what came from other leads. So, and it is convenient to introduce the quantities which look like conductances from conductances between different leads, which are effectively the following. So it's either, so it's derivative of the so actually let me write that derivative of the current with respect to the voltage in some other contact, and you get simple expression using just this T alpha beta, and in the same way you should you can introduce the conductance for the coinciding indices, and you get this. Now what are the relations describing the currents and voltages in your system, right? So using these notations, you can rewrite this expression as follows. So you can say that current out of lead alpha is simply given by the sum over all leads G alpha beta V beta. And there is an important condition that some there is sort of a sum rule which tells you that which effectively tells you that the currents are conserved, right? Whatever you can get it from here as well, right? So from you can get it combining these two relations, this one and this one, right? So this is the analog of the unitarity of the S matrix for the single lead. So this is effectively the modification of the Kirchhoff law which describes such a coherent circuit. And to get some feel for how it works, let's consider a simple example where we have some current leads and some voltage leads. Mm-hmm. You have a question? No. Ah, okay. So let's consider the following simple situation. So let's again go back to our example of the wire with a lead, right? So with a barrier. And let's assume we are driving current through this system, and let's ask if we had voltage probes, right, attached here, right? So there'll be voltage probes A and B. What would be the voltage we measure across this barrier? Would it be different from the voltage we apply to drive current? Now, what do I mean by the voltage probe? So a voltage probe is essentially, it is just used to measure local chemical potential, so there is no current through it, right? So if I give you some configuration of contacts and tell you these are current, let's say these are current leads with some current flowing through them, and these are voltage leads. The condition you would apply is that there is no current through the voltage probes, okay? But the current probes or leads rather, right? There is some current flowing through them, which you effectively, the way the problem is set up, you drive some current and this is given, and then you find the distribution of the voltages throughout the system. Now, voltage probes can be, there are different kinds of them, but the most useful kind is an ideal voltage probe, which does not disturb or disturbs very little the distribution of current in the system. So how does it work? So let's imagine that we have a piece of some small segment of wire, and we have a current flowing through it. So let's say these guys come with some voltage V left, these guys come with some voltage V right, which is different. And the voltage probe would be the following. So it would be another lead which is very, very weakly coupled. So these electrons have very, very small chance of escaping the wire and coming to the voltage lead. Okay? And then of course with the same coupling, stuff from the lead would come back to the wire. And you need to find the sort of induced value of the voltage here, right, on the probe, depending on the current in the wire. And you can easily convince yourself that the voltage measured by your probe is simply given in this situation by the mean of the voltages for the right going channel and for the left going channel. Okay. If you want to be more careful, you can do the following. You can just assume that there is only a single mode in the voltage probe and assume that there is some small transmission probability taking you from here to here, and then just explicitly write how would you get the condition of no current through the voltage probe. Okay, but this is what you're going to end up with. And now, if we go back to this example, and if we work it all out using this fact, you can get the following answer. So voltage measured by the A probe would be given by the mean of the guys going to the right and going to the left. So the guys going to the right are effectively, this is left, right. It's only V left, right? And the guys going to the right, so some of them got reflected and some of them got transmitted from the other contact. Right, so times the transmission, so you get V left over 2 plus V right over 2. And in the same way, you can calculate voltage measured on the other side of the contact, and you end up with similar expression, except you need to change places between left and right. And from this you can calculate the conductance, and what you find is something very interesting. So let's call it G four terminal, right? Because now it's a different setup, and what you find that this conductance is actually different from the Landauer formula. You need to divide it by 1 over minus t, right? So compare it to the formula we had there. Right, so how does it happen? Where is the trick, right? Where is the contradiction? But in fact there is no contradiction, because this conductances are defined differently, right? And one in this case, the voltage we put in is effectively the voltage drop across the barrier. Okay, so in this case, we cannot drive current by this lead, right? But in the other case, effectively, we measured the voltage drop across the barrier and the voltage drop across the contacts and the quantum wire, right? So you see that they're different, right? So this conductance is larger than the two terminal conductance. All right. So now, actually, let us consider. So this in general gives you a sense of how to treat such systems, right, with many leads and so on. So how you would find the distribution of voltages given the currents. But now let's change our focus a little bit, and let's try to apply this scattering matrix formalism to study localization, right? So let's link it with the topic we discussed yesterday. So the first thing we want to consider is the following, right? So let's consider link between. So Landauer and localization. First, let's ask if we have two quantum resistors like that. How do they add up? So now we would have, and let's just assume that there is a single mode for simplicity. We have this is some barrier or some combination of barriers. It would not matter. As you will see, let's say we have two of them, and let's ask what would be the total resistance of such a system. So what we need to do is quite simple. We need to consider incoming wave, it can get reflected here, right? There is something here. It can get transmitted or it can get reflected. And then you need to match all these waves by using the scattering matrices of these two objects. So S1 is simply, okay, T1, R1, R1, T. I think it was different, right? So it's R1, T1, T1, R1 prime. And this is R2, T2, T2, R2 prime. And so, and in addition, there is some phase phi you pick up when you travel between these two contacts, between these two objects. So after doing this mode matching, which I will skip and which is quite easy, what you find is that the transmission amplitude of this total object, right? So it's T to the exponential here is given by the following simple formula. Okay, so from this you can find the transmission coefficient, so by just squaring it. So and what you find is that times cosine theta, where theta is related to phi, right? And also there could be different phase between this reflection amplitudes. Argument R2, R1 prime. Okay. So now we can also calculate the four terminal conductance from it, because yeah. Ah, okay. So you need to. You mean here, right?
Yeah, because we have a property in case more than getting.
Well. Wait. So what is your question? That why?
How you take into account that it can propagate?
Right. Right. This is all here, right? Ah, okay. So your question is why do I pick up phase phi only? Why do I count it only once? Okay, yeah, that's a good question. So very very generally, right? I can seek my solution in the following form, right? It would be some exponential here, right? It would be some reflected wave. Let's say B. Here I know that this is a free region, right? So it would be essentially the superposition of plane waves. Right. And so there is this transmitted wave, right? So I know that there is a relation, right, between these coefficients here, right? So C and B would be related to 1 and D simply by the scattering matrix S1. Okay, now let's ask what happens here, right? This is just a question of where I choose my origin, right? If this were at the origin, I know that also that T and D are related to C, right? By the other scattering matrix. But now, of course, this one is not at the origin, so I just need to change their phases to bring them to the origin. So this is here physically. You don't need to take this phase into account more than once, right? Is it clear? Okay. So going back to the resistances, it is clear that if you are thinking about the system, you need to look at the four terminal resistance, because if you have a lot of barriers and so on, right? Current contacts are somewhere far, and you can only use voltage probes to study the distribution of the voltage. So let's do that. Let's look at the four terminal conductance, and for simplicity, let's make it dimensionless. Right, this is the four terminal resistance across the whole structure, and what you find is the following simple expression if you carry out the algebra T1, T2. Right? This is quite an interesting formula, because you see first of all that the result strongly depends on the phase you pick up, right? It strongly fluctuates as you vary the distance between these objects, right? So strong, these are called mesoscopic fluctuations, and of course there is a strong violation of the Ohm's law, right? Which is expected. So for the Ohm's law, you would simply expect R1 over T1 plus R2 over T2. Okay, this is different. Now let's go further. So let's ask what happens if we have a lot of such objects in series, right? Because in some sense this could serve as a model of a disordered one-dimensional conductor, right? So now of course there are questions of how to introduce disorder. So in principle, all your transmission coefficients would fluctuate, these phases would fluctuate because the distances between them are different, right? But let me consider a very simplified toy model of disorder. So I will assume that absolute values of all the reflection coefficients are the same, but the phases fluctuates, right? So this phase theta is random. And let me ask how does the resistance of n such objects behaves on average. Now, of course, with disorders, the problem is always what quantity to average, is it meaningful, and so on. But for a moment, let me not worry about it. Let me do the very, very naive averaging. So let me just assume that I could average resistances. Okay, so then if you would assume that the average resistance of n such objects put together is, let me call it inverse conductance averaged, right? Then if I attach one more, right, n plus first, then using the above formula, I can simply relate average resistance of the n plus one resistor to this one and to the average resistance of this guy, which is simply R over T. Right, because you see from that formula that you can if you naively average over theta, you can just drop this term. Right, so average value would be just this divided by this. Right, so using this fact, I can relate the resistance at the n plus first step to the resistance to the reflection coefficient of the group of n resistors plus one more divided by t n times t. And let me also for simplicity assume that each resistor is very small, such that it's almost perfectly transmitting. Then t is pretty much one, right, and r is some small number. Then I can neglect this factor here. This will make our life a bit simpler. So now let me write it. So this ratio is simply G minus one N, right, for N resistors plus R over T N. And I can use this to write effectively the change of the conductance after one more step. Right? So this would be some simple version of over G, so to say. And then I can express this in terms of this, right? In terms of conductance, so that I get a differential equation for the conductance only. Okay, so you get effectively this how the average conductance of this disordered system scales with its size, right? And this is also very very informative result, because it tells you that there are different regimes, right? It tells you first of all that at first, when you have only a few, so at first when the conductance is when the resistance is small, right, the conductance grows linearly with the number of gn minus one is much less than one, right, gn is effectively resistance is just given by the number of resistors you have, so this is Ohm's law, right? So you can just add them. But once, so this is Ohm's law, right? But once gn minus one becomes of the order one, then here it's a dominant term. And then the resistance grows exponentially, right? So then you see that resistance goes as an exponential of Rn. Okay, and this is nothing else but the localization. Okay, so it tells you that quantum interference effects are such that they make the resistivity of your system exponentially large. Right, so we got effectively what we got in this toy model is this beta function we introduced at the end of last lecture. Okay, so now of course this was problem with this argument is that averaging used here is very naive, right? So because effectively what I assumed, right, that I can average over the theta n plus one after essentially that averaging over theta n plus one is independent of the averaging over the previous phases. And for this quantity is actually not true, but you can show that the proper quantity to average is actually log of one plus g minus one. So if you consider such a quantity, you find that you can average over different phases independently, okay? And then you end up if you carry it all out, and I guess yeah we won't go into that right now. You find very similar result to the one we have here, which tells you that log of one plus g n minus one averaged. Is simply r times n. Okay, so once again, you end up with the typical value of the resistance first going according to the Ohm's law. So you just add your resistors, and then once it becomes of order one, then quantum effects dominate and typical value of the resistance is exponentially large. Okay. Now of course there are also interesting effects in how this resistance fluctuates, and this is in fact a very very broad distribution. Okay, so we'll learn a little bit more about it later. So let's stop here for today. So please ask questions if anything is unclear. All right. If not, see you tomorrow.